Now.
Here we go.
This is an ATS Mix special edition. This time, it's Dave broadcasting from a makeshift basement studio somewhere in the state of Texas and wearing pretty much just his underwear. Ladies and gentlemen, AboveTopSecret.com regrettably brings you David Rabbit.
Hi, everybody. You're going to have a great time with this special edition of the ATS Mix. I have with me Wayne Green, who is the founder of 73 magazines, including Byte, CD Review, Cold Fusion, New Hampshire To Do, and dozens of others. Wayne is an international speaker as well as being a guest speaker on numerous popular radio shows. Wayne speaks about amateur ham radio, health, nutrition, wealth, world travel, politics, cold fusion, submarines, education, new future technologies, unusual books, extraterrestrials, and most about any topic in the world that a listener wants to discuss. It's my pleasure to bring aboard Wayne Green. Hi, Wayne. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine, Dave. I hope you are.
Well, I am, and thanks for joining me today for your show. I tell you, when I went to your website, and I want to tell everybody about your website, it's www.waynegreen.com.
I tried to make it hard to remember.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it must have taken you a long time to figure out the name of the website.
Right.
But, you know, when I first got the stuff from our New York City guys in the PR department said, boy, this guy is going to be great. And I started looking at it, Wayne. I am just really impressed with everything you've done, man. What an amazing resume. Okay, well, let's get into it. You know, most people want to know, Wayne, when successful people in the world, and I mean, you know, you can pick anybody that's successful, there had to be maybe something in their life that was the catalyst to make them have a desire to research ETs or research ways to have better health or do this or do that. Can you think of the maybe a time or an instance that you knew exactly what you wanted your mission to be?
Well, I know the one thing that changed my life totally, and let's see, I was about 13 years old, and my grandfather had died just a few months previous, and I went to church on a Sunday morning to go to Sunday school with a friend of mine, Alfie, and a fellow arrived there with a big box of radio parts, and he asked Alfie if he was interested, and Alfie said, oh, no, maybe, what about you, Wayne? I said, you bet. So I took this big box of radio parts home, and I found an article in Popular Mechanics on how to build a cigar box radio. And it worked. I was hooked. So from there, it led into amateur radio, of course. And amateur radio has been a driving force in my life. And what's more fun than publishing a magazine about amateur radio for a hobbyist like that?
Right.
Which I did for 43 years.
Wow. What year was that that magazine started?
I started that in 1960. Actually, I started my first magazine in 1951. I was having so much fun with ham radio teletype. I said, gee, I've got to share this fun with others. I've got to share this. And so I started a newsletter, and it quickly evolved into a kind of a small magazine, running 32 pages a month and so forth, and got a lot of people, got thousands of hams interested in ham radio teletype. And that got me the job with CQ Magazine, which was one of the two ham magazines at the time, first with a monthly article on the subject, and then when I got the editor a better job with another magazine, all of a sudden I was the editor. And that went fine. I had a fantastic time doing that. And that there's a whole bunch of adventures involved with that. And then in 1960, in January, they fired me because they owed me over a year's back pay.
Well, that's a good reason to quit, I would think,
well,
maybe.
they fired me. So I said, gee, you know, I'm having so much fun doing this, I guess I'll start my own magazine. So I sold all the toys that I could and got enough money to published the first issue of 73 magazine. 73 in amateur radio language means best regards.
Right.
And left over from the first hams who had been on the wire lines out west, where when you signed off a message, you said, I will you my 73 Winchester. And pretty soon it boiled down to just a 73, and of course the hams started using that.
Yeah.
So I used that for the title of the magazine.
Wow.
And it was successful.
Well, obviously, you know, I mean, you know, all right, let's go from magazines to something that we have a huge military fan base, and you and I talked off air.
Sure.
Tell me about the naval involvement, when you became involved with the Navy and some of your things there.
Of course. when the World War II came along, I was going to college at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, and having a ball with my ham radio, and but I could see that, you know, there wasn't any. I was 19 years old.
Yeah, we've all been there. So,
I knew that I was trench meat. So I looked around and said, what's the best deal I can do? And I tried to join the Army Air Force, and they said, you got allergies. We can't take that, you know, and so forth. So a fellow who worked for my father was in the Navy, and he got me together with Commander Bourne down at the Naval Research Laboratory down near Washington, D.C. And I went down and visited him, and he says, I want you to work for here. So I said, okay, fine. He said, but first you have to go to radar school so that you can catch up on the technology. And I said, okay. So I joined the Navy, and they sent me out to Treasure Island, California, and at San Francisco for the Navy school out there. And it was fantastic. I just had so much fun. I hated school all through my whole career because I was forced to do it by law, and I felt like I was a slave, and they were making me memorize all this stuff for tests.
Right.
And so I didn't like that. But the Navy school was fabulous, and I had a wonderful time. And then I got to thinking. I said, you know, here I am. I'm a young kid, and there's all these fellows that have wives and kids. I said, they're the ones that should be working at laboratories and so forth, and I should be out there doing the fighting. So I volunteered for submarine duty, and they sent me down to take the physical. And I went there, and they memorized the eye chart just in case, ETAN, and so forth. And
yeah, I've done that myself too. I've also done that at 59 in the driver's license. Well, I hope they don't hear this.
Right. DEFTOTEC backwards is DEFTED.
Oh yeah, baby, I'm right there with you on that one.
So they looked at me and they said, "You're too fat." And I said, "Well, how too fat am I?" And so they weighed me and they said, "Well, you're 8 pounds over." And I said, well, this is Friday. If I come back Monday 8 pounds lighter, am I in? And they said, sure. So I went over the grinder and exercised and didn't drink or eat anything for the whole weekend and came back 9 pounds lighter on Monday. And they looked at me and they said, wow. And but you have flat feet.
I think they were trying to tell you something,
I
Wayne.
I went back to the school and they said, did you pass? And I said, yep. And every now and then, during serious depth charging, I'd go back to the omen and say, let me look at my health, at my record there. And it says, disqualified for submarine duty. I was the electronic. I picked submarines because I'd be in charge. I do very poorly taking orders from other people. Something that was never popular with my dad. Because I told you to.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we've all been that one. Well, I mean, hopefully you weren't claustrophobic being in submarine service.
No problems by that.
When you were doing that, one
of the most successful submarines in the war, and my
Tell me about some of your experiences on that.
Okay, I'll tell you about that. My boat's on display down in Mobile, Alabama, if anybody gets a chance, and they can see a picture of me some 60 years ago. And so forth on the bulkhead there. That's Navy for wall.
Right.
But at any rate, yes, we had some very interesting. There was a couple of times when I saved the boat.
And, really?
Yep. One time we had these new electric torpedoes. We were one of the first ones to try them out. Before that, they had steam torpedoes, which left a wake of bubbles so that the escorts could quickly track you down after you send a torpedo.
Right.
And so we had the new electric ones, and the naval instructions said they must be set for 6 feet depth. So, okay, so we set it, and we had a beautiful target. We were going along at night and on the surface, and there were three ships bow to stern. You couldn't miss. So we fired all six board torpedoes, and they all went under the ships and exploded beyond when they reached the end of their trail. Well, it didn't take the escorts long to figure about where we were, and so they took out after us. And we're on the surface going all ahead flank, and which is a little faster than all ahead.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, we're going as fast as we could, and they were closing in. So finally, the captain said, "Okay, take her down, Spinuga, Spinuga," and down we went. Well, there was a little problem. Now, my job was to come down from the conning tower where I was operating the radar, and go back to go to the forward torpedo room and lower the sound heads for the two underwater sound systems. And so I shut off the radar, zipped down into the control room from the conning tower, and as I was running from the control room to the forward battery, I heard the fellow on the bow plane say, "My bow planes are stuck on full dive, and I can't get them off."
Oh, God.
And we were down. We had about a 20-degree or 25-degree angle by this time, heading for the bottom.
And everybody's screaming, right?
And I kept running and got to the forward torpedo room and hollered at the torpedo man. I said, "Get a pry bar and get those bow planes off full dive. They're stuck." So they didn't have any other communication at that time. Nobody had gotten on the phones yet. And so they quick ran over with a pry bar, and two of them pried it off full dive. And we went down. Now, our boat was what's called a 300-foot boat. It was tested to 300 feet. And we got down to 450 feet before we got it.
Wow.
Turned around and coming back up again. And a little bit, everything was popping.
Right.
And, you know, another 10 or 20 feet and we'd have been goners. But just because I heard it and yelled and so forth, it saved it. But we had some real interesting times with that. We got depth charged a lot and so forth.
Well, before we get off this,
ships.
Oh, well, that's great. I mean, and you didn't sink any U.S. ships, did you, accidentally?
No.
All right. Well, you never know. I mean, you know, we had friendly fire in Vietnam.
No mistakes.
So I don't. Okay, well, good. And did you ever have one like that old Bob Hope thing or Operation Petticoat to where you launched a torpedo and you blew up a Jeep or something?
No. No. But that happened. All right, well, something like that did happen, yeah.
Oh, where you launch a torpedo and it goes up on the on the beach or something?
My boat did do something, and there was a movie called Destination Tokyo.
I remember that,
right.
Yeah.
Well, my boat's the one that went into Tokyo Harbor, snuck through the chains, got into Tokyo Harbor, and waited for an aircraft carrier to be launched, a brand new one,
right,
and torpedoed it.
Wow. Well, well, then you were part of history then. Well, That's a historical moment.
That was before I got on, but that was my boat. I was on.
But
the
I mean,
last
still, you were on. You were still on a very historical boat as far as World War II goes.
You betcha.
Wow. All right. Well, I got one other question.
So and, that was World War II, anyway.
Well, everybody always wants to know, Wayne, you know, when you're sitting there and you're down there 300 feet or whatever, and you've got these escorts from the Japanese, you know, coming over you and stuff, when they're depth charging, you know, the hell out of you guys, I mean, you see it on the movies, but I mean, obviously.
They never have it right in the movies.
Yeah. So what really transpires? I mean, does everything just shake, or do your ears start popping because of the noise? Can you tell me just a little bit about what it is to experience that?
Well, first of all, usually you've been going all ahead full on the surface when you dive. So the boat is hot, and you've got sweat running around the decks from everybody. And, right. Of course, everything has to be silent and quiet. And whispering and so forth, so they can't hear you. And every time a depth charge goes off, you hear a click, and then it sounds like somebody with a giant hammer right outside the hull. Bong! And the movies never get that right.
Right.
But it's click, bong!
But is it like deafening sound?
No, it's just like somebody outside with a big hammer. And some of the fellows would get very tense with that. We had a cook there right. called Skinny Guinea, and he really got nervous when we were getting depth charged. And so I'd take his mind off it by saying, well, now that was 32. And he said, no. I said, yeah, that was 32. No. And we'd argue about how many depth charges.
Wow. All right, well, listen, before we get into some of the more controversial things I'd like your opinion about, mm-hmm. which you've made statements about, I want to talk about something not so controversial, and that is, Wayne, how do we change America from one of the sickest, shortest-lived countries in the globe into possibly a healthy one?
Well, of course, the way to do that is get the word out on what I've found with my research. The biggest scam, cover-up, whatever you want to call it, in the world is how easy it is to cure any illness with no drugs and by yourself without a doctor. Any. We're talking about cancer, days before death, cure without fail. We're talking about Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Poor Stephen right. Hawking there in his cart and so forth. May be brilliant as a physicist, but he's a real dunce as far as health is concerned. He hasn't done his research. Well, I did. And it started with a book by Dr. Bruno Combi of Institut Combi in Paris. And he has a book called Maximize Immunity. And it made a lot of sense to me. He said, look, in every research project with dogs and cats, those fed cooked food only lived about half as long as those on raw food, and they were dying of cancer and heart disease and other human ailments. So, not being real stupid, the doctor started putting his patients on raw food diets and curing them of anything. He was curing them of AIDS, cancer, Alzheimer's. It didn't seem to make any difference. And I called him and I said, look, Dr. Combi, haven't you had some failures? And he said, oh, yeah. And I said, in what diseases? He said, no, not in any diseases. My only failures are people that went back to cook food.
Wow.
So guess what I'm eating?
You're eating raw food.
You betcha. I had a wonderful lunch a little while ago.
What did you eat?
I had kale and banana smoothie. And the banana, you know, is sweet and takes right. The bitterness out of the kale, and it's delicious. A little. You put about 2 cups of kale and 2 bananas, and I like to get the overripe ones because they're 19 cents a pound instead of 49, 59, or 69.
Are free, depending on the merchant, right?
And they're sweet. And then a cup of water and put it in the blender. And it's delicious. It makes a wonderful meal. And so I use a little flax crackers with it every now and then. But, no, I eat
well, what would be one of your dinner? What would be a typical dinner for the Green household?
Well,
oh, you're laughing. I can tell this is going to be good.
Well, not the household, just me.
Okay, well, you then. Okay.
Yeah, I'll have a big salad, and again, I'll have some kale and spinach and Swiss chard. And then I'll pulverize a bunch of Brazil nuts and walnuts and almonds and so forth and sprinkle it over it. And a little dressing, there, ginger dressing. And then I'll have some of these cherry tomatoes and a special coleslaw sauce that I make, a recipe from my grandmother.
Right.
And it's got all good material in it, you know, virgin olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, and yogurt from Sunnyfield Farms over here, so it's organic, and honey, and apple cider vinegar, organic.
Wow.
So you have sweet, sour, creamy. Makes a wonderful, and anything. I mince cauliflower, broccoli, and carrots together and put some of the sauce on that, and it makes a wonderful side dish and so forth.
Wow.
And, of course, it's good as on cabbage as coleslaw.
Yeah, but I mean, do you have like a regimented dietary thing that you do?
And then for dessert, I frequently and most of the time have a smoothie made with milk and banana, and that's it.
Wow. All right. Well, so much for the nutrition part of this show.
Oh, and,
because
one of the wonderful things you can do. for instance, is to take grapefruit and put it in a blender, you know, peel it first, just the outer peel,
right.
Not the inner peel,
right.
And cut it up into chunks, put it in the blender, and it gives you a grapefruit slush. And I add a little bit of maple syrup to cut the bitterness of the grapefruit and so forth.
Right.
And that makes a wonderful side thing for breakfast and so forth. And oranges, I just cut up four oranges and put them in the blender, and it gives you lots of fiber that way. You know, if you squeeze them, you just get the juice. But this way, you get an orange slush and a grapefruit slush, and it's very healthy.
Well, you're making me thirsty.
So anyway, all right. You can cure anything. I love getting letters from people saying, you know, this person was had Parkinson's disease 2 weeks ago, and they're cured. And, you know, 2 months ago, I could hardly get up and downstairs because of my emphysema. I said, now I'm running up and downstairs.
Right. And now, this is all in your book, Secret Guide to Health,
That's
is
right.
it not?
What I did was I took all of the information from Dr. Bruno Combi, and I said, okay, now here's the other poisons that you want to avoid. If you stop putting poisons in your body, your immune system will recover from fighting poisons every day, all day, and get in there and fix anything. Your immune system is your repair and maintenance department, and it can fix anything that's wrong if you give it a chance. But we keep poisoning it. And I said, you know, avoid fluoride. What you want to do is distill your water, and you can go to steamdistiller.com and get an inexpensive still and so forth.
A still?
Yeah, for distilling your drinking water.
Oh, I thought maybe we were back up in the mountains of Ozarks or something.
No.
Not the same still, right?
You don't want chlorine or lead or any of the things that are in drinking water. So, or tap water, I should say. But,
all right, well, listen.
I cover all of those things.
All right, well, I want to go on to some things that topics that I know the AboveTopSecret.com membership is really going to want to hear your opinion on, Wayne.
Okay.
And the first one, which is obviously a controversial subject, it was involved in the presidential election a few years ago, and that's global warming. What do you think the real cause of global warming is, Wayne?
Well, from everything that I've read, it has more to do with what is called Planet X coming through the solar system. And all of the planets have heated up, and I haven't figured yet how our driving SUVs is going to warm up Mars and start the ice melting on the poles of Mars for the first time in history. And we're doing exactly as one would expect. All of the planets are heating up, and we don't know just how serious it's going to be. Both Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce predicted a pole shift coming up.
Right.
And that
2012, isn't that what the date they're picking on?
Well, neither one of those. Nostradamus said shortly after the millennium.
Right.
And that's his, you know, nobody's, Casey didn't give any dates either, except to say, you know, it's coming up.
Right.
But this thing is coming in. The United States has built a major observatory in Antarctica. And I've talked to people who work there, and they said, we can't tell you anything about it.
Well, that's very freedom of information-ish. I love that.
Right, sure. I love that.
Yeah, FOIA! FOIA. Right. Well, we can't tell you anything about it,
Wayne. We're lied to about, and, you know, things are covered up about so many things. It just keeps me busy keeping track of all of them.
Well, while we're talking about things that are covered up, and since we're on the conspiracy angles, you know, you've made a statement before, and I mean, obviously, there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people that are right there with you, and I guarantee you there's a, if you'll excuse the technical term, a buttload of members from AboveTopSecret.com that would agree with you on any stance on this. But let's talk about a few of them. Let's talk about secrecy on the UFOs. What's your opinion on that?
Well, there is so much evidence. You know, I'm a person who does not believe in anything. I say, what is the data? What are the facts? And we have thousands and thousands and thousands of reports of these things from people that had no way to get together and concoct them.
Right.
So they're pretty real.
Right, right.
And they've been around for a long time.
Yeah, we have, like, presidents of the United States that have seen flying saucers.
And Kucinich saw one, too, and so forth. So, no, they're around, and I've seen things that didn't make any other sense myself.
Right.
One night, we were working late, and a fellow at the art table looked over and says, what's that light down there in the valley? And I said, okay. We looked out the window, and it was a bright, very bright light hanging down in the valley, and it looked like it was hanging a couple hundred feet over the trees. And it was just hanging there. I said, gee, that's weird. And so we watched it for about 5 minutes, and all of a sudden it zipped away and went around the mountain 10 miles away within seconds.
Wow.
What's
well, you
that?
Know, just just in the last couple of days here in Texas, you know, now I live in Dallas,
sure.
But there's like a, I think Stephenville or somewhere, I can't remember, but the whole town saw a UFO sighting. And I mean, boy, they had ABC, CBS, NBC down there and putting them on. You know, in fact, Larry King Live had them on last night, which is whatever day we're doing this interview. But, you know, last night it was a Larry King Live scenario.
Sure.
So, I mean, there's just thousands and thousands of pieces of evidence, but yet the government continually denies that there is anything.
Well, they
that
don't
drives
know,
me absolutely
they have
crazy.
To. You know, they don't know what to do about it, and they don't want to admit that.
But, I mean, what harm would it be, Wayne? I mean, really. You know, I mean, if everybody thinks they're there anyway, what harm is it to say, yeah, well, you know, we really have something in Area 51? I mean, what's the harm? I have never understood that logic. You know, it's not like back in the 40s and the 50s where everybody was so, you know, oh, flying saucers and, you know, and all this other stuff.
Sure. By
you
the
know,
way,
I don't understand it.
I'm fairly well convinced that these things are able to travel in time.
Yeah, I've heard from many scientists as an example about transdimensional.
Well, you know, just think of what we've learned in the last 100 years and think of a civilization that may be thousands or more years ahead of us. Time travel will come along, and I think when many of these UFOs may be just from our future. Because what's the first thing we would do when we invented time travel? We'd go back and do a history, right?
Right.
Well, what's on the cave paintings from 17,000 years ago over in France? UFOs.
Exactly.
What did Alexander describe in his diaries? UFOs over his battle scenes.
Right.
All the same shape.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and, you know, no civilization makes the same model for 17,000 years.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be some variant somewhere along
sure.
the way.
So,
you know,
they go back and did a history, and that was that.
All right, well, you know, I'm going to go on to the next conspiracy. We recently, on the ATS Mix Show at AboveTopSecret.com, interviewed William Rodriguez, who was the last man out of the Twin Towers in New York City when 9/11 occurred.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on the 9/11 conspiracies that are flowing around?
Well, from everything that I've been able to read, and I've got 10 books here I've read on the subject, this is something that the government did, some branch, some secret part of the government did, just like Roosevelt organized Pearl Harbor. And
right.
There's a book by Spinett called Day of Deceit. And it took him years to penetrate the secrecy on that, but he did finally and published it. And I think it's going to take years before this one here is totally, and we find out who and what. But it had its served its purpose. And we didn't lose very many more people. Well, I think we lost a lot more than we admit, but we didn't lose
right.
much more than we did at Pearl Harbor. And Roosevelt organized it so that he didn't have any ships there that were important. He had some old battleships that were left over pretty much from World War I and didn't need anymore. And all of the aircraft carriers were out and so forth. So, again, there's no indication that there were any Arabs involved in this. And so there's just, you know, you could make a list of 100 questions that just are not answerable by the official story.
Right. Well, you know, there's a ton of people and a ton of threads on AboveTopSecret.com that you know, query the conspiracies of the 9/11 thing. But, you know, there's one that hardly anybody ever talks about anymore, and I noticed in some of the things that you have an interest in, and I definitely have an interest in it because I have been there and have some friends in that area, and that's the Oklahoma City bombing.
Well, that was
tell me your take on that. Tell me your take on that.
That was the beginning, and as a matter of fact, I have a video available on DVD of the television announcers that day in Oklahoma City interviewing people that were in the Murrah Building. And they said, yes, the first explosion was in the building, and then a little while later, that truck blew up but didn't even make a hole in the ground. And then
right.
they show trucks coming to pick up, bomb squads coming to pick up two more bombs that were in the building. The purpose of that was to get the Patriot Act, number one, enacted quickly by Congress without reading it. And it worked. And that
right.
took away our freedoms. And right after the Twin Towers deal, they had the Patriot II Act all ready to go. Just by what a fantastic coincidence.
Amazing, wasn't it?
Sure.
Congress can't sit. It takes Congress months to sit there and pass simple legislation on health care or whatever amendments are doing to Social Security,
right.
which I'm coming up on it. You're already on it. But isn't it amazing that something like this, miraculously, 24 hours later, well, we just happened to draft this, Mr. President, and they have it right there for everybody to sign. Amazing.
Right. You know, several hundred pages. Nobody read it. Bang, goes through, and so forth. And you mentioned the term health care.
Right.
And, of course,
right.
as I say, that is one of the biggest scams in the world.
it really is healthcare.
It's sickness exploitation. And, yes, we are the sickest civilization in the world, in the developed countries, and
right.
we're the shortest lived, and we have the highest infant mortality rate, and so forth. We're doing it to ourselves, and every time you eat a cooked meal, every time you smoke, drink alcohol, or any poisons that you put in your
right.
body, or get a vaccination, if you learned the truth, you'd never allow any member of your family ever to have a vaccination. And you'd never allow them to drink pasteurized milk or pasteurized anything. If you're
right.
going to drink milk, you use raw milk. And, of course, they make it as difficult as possible to get that.
Right. Unless you live on the farm and you can just
well,
go.
Well, fortunately, we have several farms around here, and I can go get raw milk. As a matter of fact, I did this morning.
Well, you know, I grew up on a with my grandmother a lot in the summers, and they had cows and goats and everything. And right. I used to help my grandfather milk cows. And boy, I remember that old metal tin pail or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Squirt. And all my grandmother ever did was is she scooped off the stuff on the top, the fat, if you will.
Yeah.
And she churned her own butter.
Of course.
And then every glass of milk that I had, and I'm telling you, it's the absolute best milk in the world. I don't like hot milk, but when it was chilled, I could not get enough of that milk. You know,
well,
it was great.
It's that way. It is delicious.
It is delicious.
And as a matter of fact, I do a TV show over here at what's called Manchester Community Access Media, MCAM. And by the way, they can go on the MCAM.org and watch my shows called Wise Up with Wayne. And I bring in milk for them, and they say, oh, it's just, they can't get over how good it is.
Well, you know what's funny? When I got the information from our PR firm in New York about this interview with you, and I had done my research and stuff, and I put up on a thread on the AboveTopSecret.com site. I put up the picture of you with your pilgrim's hat.
Oh, yeah.
The sheriff's outfit. Yeah, seeker of the truth. I mean, I love that. How long ago was that picture taken?
Oh, a couple of years ago at a local fair here. Is an outfit that takes pictures of you with old-timey costumes.
Well, I love it because it really fits everything that we've discussed so far because you come out with guns a-blazing, babe.
Yeah. Well, you can see all right. I take myself very seriously.
I can tell. I mean, I'm very impressed. All right, let's move on to a subject that is just really pissing people off, Wayne, and that is the illegal immigration situation with our borders. What's your take on that?
Well, if we're going to pass laws, I think we ought to do something about them. And unfortunately, when we let in the illegal immigrants, that lowers the wages for everybody. As soon as you lower the bottom wages, the next wages move down and so forth. It lowers everybody's. And the idea of giving them free health care, I use that term loosely, free sickness exploitation.
Right.
And giving them Social Security and things like that is just ridiculous. So, yes, I think we ought to close off the border and organize getting the illegal people, and I think there's about 20 million of them now, and organized getting them back to Mexico before we had the North American Union.
Don't get people started on that, Wayne.
Right.
You know, boy, there's a big furor about that. In fact, presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich and his wife Elizabeth, which I told you off air, we did an interview with just recently. That was one of their things about the, all these little secret agreements with all these countries and stuff, and how we're getting screwed on the deal.
And
you know,
Amaro and so forth. Well,
yeah.
One of the things you'll find on my website is my comment. And I said, look, if we're going to have Canada, U.S., and Mexico, let's keep on going. You know, North America doesn't end there. We've got a big enough army to go down and take care of Nicaragua, El Salvador, Belize, and Guatemala, and Panama, and so forth. You know, let's make this a real American Union.
I love that. I love that. Boy, how come we're not doing it? I don't know. I don't understand.
You know, we got a big enough army that isn't doing anything. You know,
yeah.
My gosh, if we just took the army out of Germany, 70,000 people over in Germany, we could send them down there and take care of all those countries.
Well, while we're on that subject, boy, I'm glad you... I know you're laughing because you know where I'm going with this.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I don't remember who it was, but someone talked about the other day with me on a show that the amount of military people that we have spread throughout the world is staggering.
What is it, 144 countries now?
Yeah, and I'm not just talking about Iraq, which we're going to touch on after we get through, but let's get off Iraq. Let's just talk about the people that we have in other countries. Mm-hmm. I mean, and have for years.
Yeah.
It's staggering.
I know. We're all over the world. 30,000 over in Korea. and so forth. Oh, let's talk about Iraq for a moment.
All right, let's rock on it. You know, I know you want to go here, because one of your scenarios was if there was a win-win solution for the Iraqis. But let's, since this is all militarily, let's talk about this, because this is a hot subject.
Sure. Instead of trying to export democracy, which doesn't work very well, and
I think
we ought to export business. Now, there has been an enormous success with what's called microloans over in India and countries over there, where they go in and lend them just a few $100 or even $1,000 to get a family business going. Well, now, supposing we took what we're spending in one day in Iraq and started making small loans to families that want to have business, and then supposing we take some money and form business incubator groups to incubate larger businesses, not big ones, but larger. And that way, I have a little plan that I'd like to see happen in the United States, where we could form thousands and thousands, well, millions of small businesses and fund them and so forth at a profit. But if we could get them busy making money, you know, we walked in there and immediately put 400,000 people out of work that worked for the government and the military and with nothing to do. And then we put another 500 and something thousand out of work at the factories that were owned by Hussein, and we closed all the factories.
Right.
That's crazy. That's almost a million people out of work with no way to get a job, no way to make money. And, you know, how are you going to get love doing that? So, now if we get them back into business and making money, they'll be busy with that and stop killing each other over what the branch of Islam they're involved with and things like that. Money talks.
Right.
It talks loud and clear. So let's get them busy making money.
Well, you know, while you're on that thing, you know, and I have been proclaimed as a rebel numerous times, but you know, I'm kind of like you are to a degree, Wayne. You know, I mean, I'm a pretty factual person, but I have my grandmother taught me common sense. Okay,
and whatever
yeah, really, but I don't have to have a book in front of me listing all this data and stuff when with my own eyes I can see that what it appears to be happening in the world today is every time we get into any conflict worldwide, and I don't care where it is, for whatever purpose, whatever they're saying or trying to sell to the public, you know, the reason why we're there, every reason in the world leads me to believe that it's just another foothold for American troops to be put in a position to strengthen the power base of the government. And it drives me absolutely nuts. If they spent just 30% less of what they do with this particular thing, imagine how many homeless people we could take off the streets of every city in America. How many people we could do Medicare, Medicaid, medical insurance for.
Let's get them to change their diet. You don't need Medicaid, Medicare.
But it's look at the money we're spending overseas that we can spend on our own folks. That's my point.
Sure.
I mean, surely you agree with that.
Well, yes, of course. And I have been to Afghanistan, I've been to Iraq and Iran and so forth. I've been to all those countries.
Right.
And had good ham radio friends over there. So I'm familiar with it. You know, the people in Iraq just couldn't have been nicer when I was there.
Right.
And the
right.
same thing in Afghanistan. They were just marvelous.
Right.
And so forth. But so we go in roughshod. Put everybody out of work and say, gee, look how we've helped you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Right. The check's in the mail.
Get the hell out of here.
All right, well, I got two more things I want to talk about before we close your show, and you've just been marvelous with your time, and I really appreciate it, Wayne. But here's something I want to talk about.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Just in case you don't mention it. this all has to do with oil.
Of course.
And having published all of the information about cold fusion, were you going to bring that up?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was good, but you already listed it, so go ahead.
Well,
jump on.
I got interested in that, and I started a magazine called Cold Fusion, and found that this works. It is, you know, the head of the Department of Energy published a book or wrote a book called Cold Fusion: The Fiasco of the Century. Well, it worked, and it worked beautifully. Professor Jim Patterson demonstrated the cold fusion cell at a week-long conference, and he had it sitting there metered with 1 watt of electricity going in, and this was the size of a coffee mug, 1 watt of electricity going in and 1,000 watts of heat coming out steadily. So we're talking energy at about 1/100 the cost of oil with no polluting byproducts. As a matter of fact, you can even use it to decontaminate radioactive waste and get rid of those thousands of tons of radioactive waste and turn it into non-radioactive material using the cold fusion system. And I published a little pamphlet that says, here is a simple explanation for how this works. It's so simple that anybody can understand it. And it works.
Wow.
So, but, you know, all the money is on oil. I had Gene Maloff was the editor of my magazine, and he made the mistake later of trying to organize a congressional hearing on cold fusion. So he got murdered.
Wow.
Jim Patterson has disappeared.
So all these people that were developing all this stuff have had mysterious deaths,
right.
In other words.
Yep.
You know, that reminds me of something, and I'm not a big, huge book reader, as all my fans know, but I like watching movies. But there was a movie that came out years ago about a guy that had developed a carburetor system for automobiles, and it was, instead of, I don't know what we were getting at the time, and this is like, I think maybe 20 years ago, but at the time I think we were averaging like 7 or 8, 9 gallons per miles per gallon or something.
Yeah.
And this carburetor at the time was capable of like something like 50, 60, 70 miles per gallon.
Right.
And after it, he came out with this stuff, and he went to the major car manufacturers, and I think he even went to the government. Then miraculously, and I don't remember the guy's name, but this guy disappears.
Of course.
And
what
you
else
never,
would you do if you're in the business?
And you never hear another word about the guy. This movie did come out about it,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, other than that, nobody knows where this guy went, where the technology went,
sure.
And that's another conspiracy.
Right.
You know?
Well, with cold fusion, I have published the scientific data by some top physicists in the world on what's going on. As I say, I have a little simple pamphlet for $2 that says, here it is in plain, simple language for a teenager. Here's how it works.
So, in other words, it's simple enough for Dave then. All right. Well, listen, there's a couple of things I want to cover real quick before we end your show. One is there's something on some of the things that you like talking about that really intrigued me because I use the word all the time. I use the word buttocks. And you have, let's have seniors patrol our malls as butt police,
right.
To help curb teenage smoking, but you're not talking about the buttocks we sit on.
No, I'm talking about taking pictures of these students and posting them as stupid jerks in the schools.
So have you led a campaign to do that yet?
Well, I proposed it to the governor, and no response.
Yeah, I can say, you know, I tell you what, you know, I mean, I'm 59, and I mean, you know, I could probably handle my own about 30 years ago or even 20 years ago, but going on 60, you know, I mean, I'm afraid I didn't read your book, Secret Guide to Health, and continue to eat stuff that's not good for me. But I doubt seriously if I went up to a gang in a mall, I'm going to take a photograph of them smoking when they know I'm going to put it up on the wall somewhere. So that you may be putting your life in your hands with that one.
Well, you can take pictures of them singly with, you know, with two seniors doing it.
Oh, yeah. So that way they beat up both of you. Right.
Right,
good. Yeah, it's a great concept. Okay. Well, my final question, Wayne, is, and that is, as I said, we interviewed Dennis Kucinich and his wife, Elizabeth, the other day. And since he's a presidential contender, whether he wins or doesn't win, doesn't matter. But you have made a statement that I can't agree enough with. And that is, we limit the presidents to have a two-term limit.
Right.
And your proposal is that... Let's don't stop at the president. Let's stop at all these knuckleheads that are up in Washington. Man, I can't agree with you enough on that, but give me your take on that.
Of course. Well, that's one of the things that I proposed. Just quickly, here's some talking points that I proposed to Ron Paul, because if I don't care who gets the presidency, but I want to get across the ideas. And it says, problem, college tuition has skyrocketed, bankrupting families. Solution, tuition-free colleges with no government support needed. And I can explain how that works.
Right.
Problem, the ever-increasing income tax. Solution, eliminate it, and the IRS, ending withholding, which will substantially increase everyone's paychecks. And we do that by taking funds from CAFR, but I can go into details on that some other time. Older people are unable to live on their meager Social Security checks. Worse, Congress has spent it. Solution, use the Social Security system adopted by Chile, which could increase payments by about 10 times what they are now. And there's a wonderful book on that called Every Man a Millionaire, and so forth. Problem, the government bloat costs everyone in both money and personal freedom. Solution, cut every department in half in 3 years with everyone involved cooperating enthusiastically. And I know how to do that. How's that?
I love that. What a great summation, I'm telling you. Well, you know, I mean, it's just a practical thing, you know. And I mean, I have nothing personally against some of the elite people up there in Washington. I'm sure they're all very nice people when you get them outside.
No, they're not. They're a bunch of crooks.
Well, they're a bunch of butt wipes, too. But still, but I mean, you know, I don't like saying disparaging things when I don't know someone personally, you know. So I have to give kind of a generic term. But here's my philosophy of the thing. It would just stand to reason to me that a young senator, as an example, congressman, they go to Washington with all these great, wonderful, wild ideas of their youth and whatever. Then they get in there and they get caught up in the system. Well, by the time they reach their second term, if they're lucky enough, you know, then they are really entrenched in that stuff. But if you limit it, like you said, to two terms, we wouldn't have... and I hate mentioning the name, but I'm going to. I mean, Kennedy, you know, up there, what is he on, like his 19th term or something? I don't know. You know, I mean, sooner or later, you need fresh blood in Congress with any hope at all to try to correct the problems that all these knuckleheads have created. And it just makes sense to me.
My approach is NRA, never reelect anyone.
I'm glad you said that, because I hope you weren't indicating we ought to get up our arms and go against Washington.
Never reelect anyone.
All right. Well, we might have gotten trouble over that. Well, listen, Wayne, I want you to hang on because I want to say goodbye to you off air. But I want everybody to go, and I will post it when we post Wayne's show, to www.waynegreen.com. That's WayneGreen.com, because he's got all kinds of marvelous, wonderful things on there about his books and all the different things, and you can get catalogs. And it's just a wonderful site, Wayne, so I can't thank you enough for joining us here on the special edition of the ATS Mix at AboveTopSecret.com. So until next time, this is Dave Rabbit. Peace.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.